Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to the United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright. So this weekend has obviously been a big moment in national history. A new president-elect after 4 years of true chaos and stress and constant use of the word unprecedented. Not to mention this awful pandemic. But, you know, it is also a really big moment for this region, for New York City, and for all of the communities in our listening area, really. So for this hour, we want to turn our attention to local questions. We're going to focus in particular on New York and New Jersey. And so I'm joined by two of my colleagues from the WNYC newsroom. Bridget Bergen is the politics reporter for WNYC. Bridget, welcome.
Hey, Kai.
And Nancy Solomon is managing editor for New Jersey Public Radio. Nancy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here, Kai.
So we have two really well-sourced people on our region and the politics in them, and listeners, particularly New Yorkers and New Jerseyites, we want to hear from you. First off, if you have any questions about how this election has unfolded and what it has meant locally for us, Nancy and Bridget are here to answer them. 646-435-7280. Again, that's 646-435-7280. But also, as I said, we are facing a lot, just as individuals and as a community. And in the previous hour, I asked, you know, everybody how you felt about your relationship to the country, to the United States, and your place in it. I have the same question now for New York and New Jersey. How do you feel about your relationship to your community here and your place in it? It will surprise neither of you, Nancy and Bridget, that our phone lines are on fire and remain full. So we're going to get right into it. But I want to first just give each of you an opportunity to answer that question. How do you feel right now? Before we even get into the politics, Bridget, let's start with you. Somebody who's been thinking about the city for a long time. Just what are your reflections on where we stand?
Well, I think seeing your neighbors erupt in celebration, sensing relief and jubilation after months of lockdown, along with weeks of protests over racial justice and policing, it was amazing to see some of that sense of relief. And as this, a city where we have seen more than 24,000 COVID deaths, and we're seeing all kinds of signs of a second wave, I think hearing the new administration, a Biden-Harris administration, talk about among their first steps in the transition, forming a COVID task force led by scientists, can be very reassuring. Mm. But there's a but. Because, Kai, I live in one of those more purple, sometimes pink parts of the city. And I will tell you that the reaction here was far more subdued than what we were seeing in Times Square or in, near Prospect Park. We know that there are pockets of the city and neighborhoods and groups of people who are still looking at this election with questions. At the same time, we also know that we as a city and as a state need, we have a huge budget gap. We have a multi-billion dollar budget gap here in the city and in the state, and that remains an unknown, particularly as we await the outcome of these two Senate races in Georgia. Yeah. So I think I personally, I was talking to my editor earlier today saying that I personally feel a lot of anxiety, even as I reflect on all the different ways that my fellow New Yorkers are reacting.
Mm. Nancy, what about you in New Jersey? You not only cover the state, you live there, you have family there. How are you feeling about the state right now, or at least your corner of it?
Yeah, you know, Kai, I think I've realized in a way that I've never really focused on how much I cherish democracy. And, you know, just like your health, you take it for granted until you get sick or injured. And I found the past 4 years personally frightening. You know, and this goes way beyond, you know, any kind of what normally we talk about as partisan politics, right? I mean, this is, you know, I wasn't worried about tax policy. I wasn't worried about the deficit. I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like political policy issues. I was frightened about our democracy. And so I found New Jersey's participation in this past election really inspiring. You know, more people voted than ever before in the history of the state, and that's despite a pandemic. 4 million voters out of 6 million and change registered voted early by mail, and that beat the turnout in 2016, which was, for its time, record turnout. So it was pretty inspiring to watch. And the fact that people, the entire state, the people who work for the state and also the voters of the state, got a whole new system thrown at them because we went by vote by mail. And, it's, you know, there were some problems, but the system pretty much worked. So I think, and I would say, you know, I feel a lot of gratitude towards county election workers who now have been added to the list of our heroes of the essential workforce.
Workers, yeah.
Yeah. And some of these folks got sick. There have been COVID cases in the county election department. So they've been working really long hours since August. So it was just a monumental task. And, you know, I'm just feeling totally excited that democracy came through.
Well, I'm talking with Nancy Solomon of New Jersey Public Radio and Bridget Bergen, our politics reporter at WNYC. And we're taking your calls. How do you feel about the city, your state, New Yorkers, New Jerseyites? How are you feeling right now after all of this? 646-435-7280. Or if you have questions about what the election means for us locally, Nancy and Bridget will try to answer them, 646-435-7280. And let's go to Joe in Union County, New Jersey. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here. And let me say to Nancy Solomon, thank you for all your reporting about New Jersey and about the Norcross brothers. I've learned a lot. I don't know enough, but I thank you for educating me all the time. Tomorrow, I have to return to my job where in a school district, what we consider a suburban-urban school district. And I know that there are many people who work with a predominantly Black and Latino population who are what we would call shy Trumpers. And I know that I have to go in. I mean, the week was excruciating, but Saturday was wonderful. Today was beautiful. I have to go in tomorrow and be humble, which I'm a little tired of doing all my life as a person of color, but I understand that it's necessary because we all have to get along. But at the same time, I really am wondering, and I'm not sure that your guests can answer it, but I am asking more the people who listen to this radio station to call in and explain, what is the purpose of being a shy Trumper? Mm. Are we trying to avoid a conversation that we don't want to have? That's contentious, or are we trying to avoid the idea that you're going to be called out in a way that makes you uncomfortable, and that you have to, I really kind of feel like it means that you have to admit some things about yourself that you're not prepared to, that you're really not, you're not willing to do, and I'm just wondering if that anybody else understands better than I do. What is the purpose of not sharing, of making sure that you don't in any way give out to the rest of the people that around you that you are a Trump supporter?
Thank you for that question, Joe. So I let me echo it. That's a great question. She wants an answer, and I think if there's someone out there that can answer it, please do call us up. If you are someone who has supported Donald Trump, but it's something you try to kind of keep to yourself, I guess maybe you might not want to call a radio station, talk about it, but let's give it a shot and see if you can answer for Joe. Why? Why is that? Why do you do that? 646-435-7280. Again, that's 646-435-7280. And Joe, thank you for that. Let's go to Robert in Jamaica, Queens. Robert, you have been waiting for very patiently to ask your question about a diverse democracy, I believe. Welcome to the show.
Well, no. All right. Listen, I'm so happy that I waited. I'm glad I didn't go first because the young lady that just spoke just now, I got the answer to her question.
What? This is perfect. Okay.
It's perfect. It couldn't be better. It's like I orchestrated this whole thing. I almost feel guilty.
Okay.
Listen, that particular thing she's feeling, because now I'm a let you in on a disclosure real quick. I'm an African American, but I am also a student, not a student, but I'm a fan. You could say fan of American history, and I just recently became a fan of American history because I was looking for those same answers that she was looking for now. Okay, now the reason why. It's not because she wanted to see a victory from Donald Trump. It's because she was curious to see if Donald Trump was for real. And I think we were all curious about that, whether we voted for him or not.
Well, but wait, Robert, are you saying that you voted for him and this is what?
No, not me. You better not spread that rumor around. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. Oh, man. Oh, you would have a real problem. I'm happy, in a way, I'm happy to see Donald Trump because we needed this. Sometimes the medicine tastes terrible, but it's good for you. We needed the Donald Trump to come along. Why? Because we needed to wake up, all of us. We're all wake up. We're all awake now, I'm sure. You're awake, I'm awake. Are we all not awake? When I looked at the news and I saw all of those neighborhoods that I used to play in, banging pots and pans and dancing. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that. Mm. So I really, in a way, I want to thank Donald Trump for showing up when he did. We needed that.
To bring us together in that way.
Yeah, not so much to bring us together. Listen, human existence is a difficult.
Robert.
Yeah, human existence is a difficult thing. And if you look back in the history long enough, you'll see that. It's what we're doing in America is almost impossible to do anyplace else. You and I know that. We needed to wake up now because we were on a collision course. Who knows what the heck was out there for us, but us Americans were on a collision course. Mm. What do we need to do hate ourselves for? We're not a third world country in South America. What do we need to run around hate ourselves for? We didn't need that. Look at the cornucopia of riches that we have in this country. You can't get this no place else. Am I right or am I wrong?
Let's see what everybody else thinks. I'm going to let you go with that though, Robert, because we got a ton of callers and I want to get to. But thank you very much for calling in. And Nancy, Bridget, any reaction to either of those calls?
Well, I think it's the flip side of the celebration that we saw across the region yesterday. I mean, obviously, we are in a deep blue region, but not all neighborhoods, not all towns, certainly, but northern New Jersey and New York, Metro New York. But the flip side is that this was a really close election, and now going forward, this is some of the anxiety that Bridget mentioned. Now going forward, we got to figure out how to come together and how to try to, find out how we can all talk to each other. And, I think it's been perplexing as reporters. Our newsroom has really struggled in how to find Trump supporters, how to talk with them, how to bring their stories to the air. Kai, you've been involved with this since 2015, 2016. It's hard to do, and it's hard to have those conversations. Yeah. And we just have to, we have to keep trying.
Let's go to Sebastian in Addison, New Jersey, because Sebastian, I think you have a question about what this administration is going to mean for us as a region. Welcome to the show.
Sure. Thanks, Kai. Thanks for taking my call. So, yeah, now that this whole thing is over and I'm relieved to see that, I would really like to get us back to COVID. And as we know, the cases are rising. As we know, this administration has been particularly at opposing these democratic run cities and states, and our region is most affected of all. I would like to see how Biden administration puts this back in the right place and get us the resources we need, because it's here and it's still going to be here for some time until it is fixed. So I'm really interested in seeing how this administration and the task force that they're going to set up helps us, these cities and our region, to move forward with COVID. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sebastian. Bridget, what about that in terms of New York in particular? You sort of alluded to this earlier in terms of what the change in administration might mean for our multi-billion-dollar budget gap. I know the governor has one perspective, the mayor has a perspective. Are you able to sort of break down what the conventional wisdom is about what's going to happen now?
Certainly, if the Democrats were to take control of the U.S. Senate along with the House, and they were able to pass an additional stimulus, and there was more state aid to address some of those issues, I think we would actually hear Mayor Bill de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo agreeing on something openly and publicly. They both agree that we need more funding, but. You know, I think there remains a question about when and, you know, how severe the crisis will be at that point. You know, these are problems that are compounding and will only get worse before January 20th. And so, you know, I don't think there's not a lot of sign that the situation will be ameliorated in any meaningful way before then. And so what do these next 10 weeks hold for us? I think perhaps that's part of my anxiety. I think just for a moment to touch on what one of the other callers was referring to in terms of the shy Trumpers. Mm-hmm. I do think that one of the things that we just had brought into really sharp relief during this election and has been growing over time is, you know, the different sources of information people rely on. And, you know, that when you're talking to some of these people who maybe are relying on different news sources, different information sources, different entire narratives of what is real versus, you know, what, you know, we consider in the mainstream media to be facts, you know, that is another place where we have so much work to do and so much, you know, not just politically, but in terms of the media itself, to try to figure out how to reach audiences who maybe got, you know, pulled away.
Yeah. I'm Kai Wright with WNYC's Bridget Bergen and Nancy Solomon. We're talking about what the election means for us locally, how we feel about our communities here, how we're thinking about our road forward together. And then finally, I don't want to lose sight of our caller earlier in the show, Joe from Union County in New Jersey, had her own question, and I want to make sure we get it answered. She wanted to know if you are a shy Trump voter, as she put it, someone who supports Donald Trump but doesn't really want to talk about it. Why? Why the shyness? What is it that gets in the way of having the conversation? That's what she wants to know. So if you're out there, give us a call, 646-435-7280. And let's start with Joe in Westchester. Joe, Okay. Welcome to the show. I understand you have a question about third-party voters.
Yeah. I don't know how much third-party vote made this year, but I heard that in 2016, if everyone who voted for Jill Stein had voted for Hillary Clinton, then she would be or might have been president.
Okay. Well,
and the second part of that question is, why couldn't Joe Biden, I mean, of any year, Donald Trump in the White House, you know, anyone who's to the left, you know, to my mind, should have voted for Biden. But there was so much opposition on the left to Joe Biden.
Hmm. So from what I can understand, at least the data I've seen, the only thing in the sort of national scope that where his third party stood out is really in Wisconsin, where there was a big change by not having
Jill Stein on the ballot, it seemed like it was that margin seems to be about the same margin that Hillary Clinton lost by as the margin that that Joe Biden appears to have won by. But if I can hijack Joe's question a little bit for you, Bridget, thinking about local third party races, this has been a big part of our conversation here this year because of the change in the ballot rules. How did things shake out in terms of third party and independent candidate or parties, third parties in this year's vote?
Yeah, I mean, there was a major change to what third parties needed to qualify to maintain their ballot line here in New York just this year. It was kind of a struggle over several months. It started as something that got slipped into a commission looking at campaign finance last year, and then a court overruled it, and then it got slipped into the budget this past year. But ultimately, it raised the number of votes third parties needed to get to maintain their ballot line to 134,000 votes, or 2% of the total vote. And it was perceived by many as an attack on the Working Families Party, which has existed and has served as a pressure point on the Democratic Party, often more than anything else in terms of progressive policies. They have also run candidates, and you know, there are candidates that have been elected as Working Families Party candidates. Letitia James, when she was first elected to the city council, ran as a Working Families Party candidate. But often those candidates run on both the Democratic and Working Families Party line. What happened ultimately is that the Working Families Party kind of pulled out all the stops and got all the progressive heavyweights, everyone from, you know, AOC to local state legislative leaders, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, to be essentially stumping online to get people to vote Biden-Harris on the Working Families Party line. And they did it successfully. They have, at this point, before even you begin counting all of those paper ballots, which doesn't start in New York until tomorrow, those absentee ballots, they have already about 4% of the vote, about 300,000 ballots so far. But it's bad news for some of the other third parties. It looks like the state's Conservative Party will probably also maintain their ballot line, but the Green Party, the Liberal Party, the Independence Party, those are parties that we will not be seeing on the ballot unless something completely dramatic and unexpected happens in the paper ballots.
And what do you think that'll mean, if anything, for just the political outlet, the political shape of the city?
Well, I think for the Working Families Party, it was a real, it's a real boost. At a certain point, you know, this is a party that has tussled with Governor Andrew Cuomo over endorsements and over, you know, policy promises that were not, you know, delivered. And I think they feel strengthened. But it also comes at a time when there are other factions organizing in the progressive space. The Democratic Socialists of America are also organizing and recruiting candidates. And, you know, this now, in some ways, you could say there are more fractures in the left wing of the Democratic Party. But potentially, there's also more opportunity for coalition building and more opportunities to put on policy pressure on issues, you know, whether it's income tax on the wealthiest New Yorkers, or, you know, other progressive policies that, you know, when it comes to policing reform or criminal justice reform.
I think we have an answer to our shy Trump voter question from a caller earlier in the hour, Serene in New Jersey. Serene, welcome to WNYC. So you have, are you a shy Trump voter, and you have a, you're willing to speak about why?
Hi. No, I'm not a shy Trump voter. I voted for Biden. But I wanted to share some of my experience with, you know, friends of mine who, you know, I would probably call as a shy Trump supporter, because, something that I've observed is that, a lot of people, that voted for Trump, they won't accept him at anything but certain very specific policies. Policies that will impact them at a personal level. Case in point is, I can share an example. Trump administration was very strict on the H-1B program. You know, from my personal experience, I know about a lot of H-1B extensions and, you know, new applications getting rejected, which these people think that in a way supports the local labor market. So less H-1B coming in, you know, more job security and better pay. So, yeah, I hate Trump on everything, but his H-1 policy would save my job, my paycheck. So, and another, you know, funny aspect of this is, are you positing that
there are some people who are like, listen, this is just pure individual self-interest. This is going to be good for me, and I can deal with all the rest of it because this is really important to my individual life.
Exactly. So, and one more thing is that a lot of people who are in supporting this policy actually came in on programs like this. And once they, you know, settle down, they just want to close the door behind them because they think that more saturation in the market, higher risk exists for their own job and paycheck. So that, you know, I don't know if that'll explain the whole Trump, you know, shy Trump, you know, supporter concept, but I think this is one contributing factor.
Thank you, Serene. Nancy, it sort of begs a bunch of questions that he's bringing up there with New Jersey. It's just the state has changed a lot since the days of Chris Christie, right? Or as it seems to me, how would you sort of trace the political shift in New Jersey in terms of who the voters are and who they're behind?
Right. So, I mean, for one thing, you know, an overarching change is that, and this isn't, you know, new and it's not since 2016, but over, you know, the last 20 years, the suburbs have become much more diverse. There's, you know, as the, especially here in this region, as the price of, you know, what it would cost to rent an apartment in New York just got higher and higher and higher, folks weren't able to afford it. And, you know, New Jersey has benefited by becoming, you know, more diverse and many immigrants, many, you know, people who've bring all kinds of different, you know, different cultures, different languages to the state. So that's one thing that's gone on. And you know, it has meant that there are more Democratic voters in New Jersey. I mean, I think, you know, 20 years ago, New Jersey was considered a swing state.
Right.
And it's solidly Democrat now in terms of statewide elections, I mean, except for the governor, but in terms of Senate elections and now Congress and certainly in presidential elections, it's no longer considered a swing state. And there are, you know, Democratic voters outnumber Republican voters in the state. So and a lot of that is focused in the suburbs. So we're seeing that change as well. But, you know, I think you may remember this, but, you know, there was a the only Trump event, campaign event in 2016 that was in New Jersey was an event in the Hindu community. And I guess because Trump is pro-Moti and there was a lot of support for him. I don't know that there was majority support, but there was a lot of support among the Indian American community in New Jersey. So, you know, it doesn't always, I'm not trying to say that the changing suburbs and the new immigrants coming into the state, it's not always true that that means that it's becoming more Democratic or, you know, Democrat big D. But we are seeing a lot of change.
And before we take some more calls, Bridget, I want to ask you about New York City is, in New York State in general, is one of the battlegrounds for the fight that is now going to kick into high gear in the Democratic Party in terms of this tension between the left of the party and the center of the party, probably quite iconically represented by Joe Biden in the center and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez right here in Queens. So she has, AOC has certainly been a go-to interview in the last few days for media outlets wanting to know what she's going to do, how she's positioning. What are you seeing when you look at that? You've covered her very closely. What are you seeing and anticipating about the coming months?
Well, one of the things that I think is striking about her assessment of some of these campaigns has been you know, it was something that she said to me when I interviewed her back when she was still, you know, burning through the soles of her shoes trying to register new voters. And, you know, it was all about trying to understand the digital strategy and the importance that, you know, really understanding and having a fully formed digital strategy is to a campaign, a modern campaign in 2020. And, you know, sort of how that plays instead of television ads or mailers or some of the traditional ways candidates have campaigned. And that type of assessment is not necessarily an ideological one. I'm not by any means suggesting that she is not a absolute progressive with strong views on the policies the party should be taking. But I think what is interesting to me is hearing both her assessment of kind of the strategy and the functioning of some of these campaigns and how Democrats could and, you know, maybe are not fully communicating their message to voters on the platforms where those voters are and getting their information, and how she's just, you know, immediately kind of a lightning rod for her positions on policy. Yeah. And I think more specifically, when you see that divergence here in New York, you see, you know, a race like hers where, you know, Republicans just poured money into it to try to oust her, despite the fact that, you know, her challenger really didn't stand much of a chance. And then you compare that to a Max Rose, who was the incumbent Democrat who won 2 years ago in 2018. His district includes all of Staten Island, a portion of Brooklyn. It is a conservative part of the city. It is the only part of the city that Donald Trump won in 2016. He won it again in 2020. And at this point, Rose is trailing his challenger, Assemblywoman Nicole Malliotakis, by a pretty significant margin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think that necessarily that sort of dueling ideology between the far left of the Democratic Party and maybe the more centrist or, you know, the more right side of the Democratic Party is as much of what I'm hearing her assessment be about is how to get the message out, how to reach your people and to be, you know, organized and connected and grassroots among your base.
Let's go to Christian in Richmond Hill, Queens. Christian, welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Kai, how are you?
Very well. Do you have a question for Bridget or Nancy, or are you just want to let us know how you're feeling about where we're at?
I want to tell you how I feel. First of all, thank you to Nancy and Bridget. You guys make sense of the world to me in WNYC. And I just want to say that I'm celebrating. You know, I'm tired. I marched in the Women's March. I protested against the Muslim ban. I'm a part of a theater troupe, and we performed a feminist flash mob at the White House during the Women's March. And we've done a lot. But I'm exhausted, and I want to celebrate. You know, I took my dog to the beach today. It was tons of New Yorkers out there. You know, I think that we have a lot of work to do. There's so much work to do, but we don't take enough. I'm a Gen Xer, so I'm not a boomer. I'm not a millennial. And, you know, I feel like I'm a bridge. Like, I have to remind people, especially the young people, because they do so much work. And a reminder that we need to just take a moment, take a breath, and celebrate. Take a few days. Yes, we have a lot of work to do, but let's just enjoy the moment. Fill our cups and just really rejoice that, you know, this monster is out of the White House.
Thank you for that call, Christian. The feeling of celebrating, I mean, certainly over the last couple of days, it feels like the last couple of days. It was just the last day, Nancy and Bridget. There has been an enormous amount of celebration in the streets of New York City, at the very least.
Kai, if I could, I'd like to take a stab at putting the two things together, what
Please.
Christian just said and your question to Bridget about this, you know, argument or debate going on within the Democratic Party. You know, and it's true that AOC was mostly talking about sort of reaching voters, but there's also the context for that is this, you know, the call that Democrats held in which some of them said that they were moderate Democrats were sitting ducks in this election, and that, you know, and they were blaming the progressive mm-hmm. wing of the party. And I think what came to my mind listening to Christian is that, you know, I talked to a lot of the activists in New Jersey that rose up immediately after the Trump election in 2016. And I checked in, I've been checking in with some this week, and I talked to one of the founders of NJ11th for Change. So, and today, and, you know, and she was saying that she feels like this debate going on in the party really kind of sells short the work that activists have been doing all over the country, and certainly in New Jersey, to the work that happened to flip Republican congressional seats in 2018 and to build a political infrastructure in the state of, you know, new blood coming into the party for local races, county races, state races. And so she was saying, you know, we opened up the space for really good Democratic candidates to jump in 2018, because it was the protests in front of the Republican congressmen's offices, mm-hmm. and it was the protests and holding their feet to the fire, calling for them, remember the empty seat town halls, right. and all, you know, they wouldn't hold town halls. They wanted to hold the Republican congresspeople in the state accountable for the Trump administration. And that's what opened up the space for these really kind of, you know, a notch above Democratic candidates who usually don't challenge for those seats because the Republicans have had a lock on them for so long. And they were able to flip four of those seats. So she feels a little, you know, she was saying that, you know, the party needs to be a big tent, and we need to give each local community and each local congressional district more leeway to make it, you know, allow Democrats to work within these purple districts. You know, so she was kind of defending the moderate Democrats in New Jersey who have been able to flip some of these seats.
Right. But not as an ideological question, but rather as a sort of how-to, that it ought to be district-by-district level of decisions instead of so top-down. Is that?
Yes, and exactly. Because, you know, the activists, it was a very broad range of people, but the leadership really came from progressives. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that all over the state. And, you know, I mean, they are working really hard, but they're creating alliances with moderate Democrats. So, you know, I think, you know, and they accept, you know, Mikey Sherrill and Tom Malinowski, they accept that those congresspeople are not going to be everything to them. They're not going to do everything. But it was so, you know, it was important to progressives in New Jersey to flip those seats. Mm-hmm.
And Bridget, it's interesting that it's the same really argument, as I gather, right, in New York City politics and the Democratic Party in Queens and from the left, of saying the point is, don't be so top down. Let us control our districts. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. And I think what we saw play out in New York really manifested during the primary, where we again, you know, AOC is known because she challenged the fourth most powerful Democrat in the country, Joe Crowley, and was able to unseat him in what was a race that people did not see coming. That she is now not the only one who has done that here in New York. Jamal Bowman, who challenged Elliot Engel, long-serving member of Congress, head of the Committee on Foreign Affairs in the 16th Congressional District up in the Bronx, you know, Jamal Bowman was backed by the Justice Democrats, the same group that backed AOC. He's an educator. He's Black. He's from Yonkers. He ran a campaign that stretched and went the distance. You know, he started early. He built a coalition. He followed essentially her playbook, and he was successful in doing that. We also have Mondaire Jones in the 17th Congressional District, who, you know, would have challenged Nita Lowey were it not for the fact she decided not to run for re-election. And he also managed to beat a very crowded field of Democrats to win the primary and then go on to win general election. Richie Torres in the Bronx. So we are seeing in New York both, you know, this new blood in the Democratic Party, a generational shift in our congressional delegation, bringing the average age down by decades, and a delegation that looks more like the people it's representing.
Right.
And I think that is, you know, we focus right now because we're in a general election time frame. So we're focused on districts that, you know, maybe had incumbents facing stronger Republican challengers. But, you know, I think it's, we shouldn't overlook how the delegation altogether has shifted. And that really does have a line back to AOC's 2018 victory.
It's really, it's an important point. And we really do lose sight of that. I've certainly lost sight of that, that it's, there's not just an ideological question here, that literally who is in office has changed dramatically in New York, in part as a consequence of that movement. So I continue to pursue an answer to Joe's question from the caller, Joe, from the top of the show about shy Trump voters. And I think we're going to take one more stab at it here. Dave in Yonkers. Dave, welcome to the show. I think you have an answer for Joe about being a shy Trump voter.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, I voted for Trump in 2016. But I frankly, you know, in seeing the, you know, the demonstrations from people, the graffiti, the public displays of, you know, really ferocious animosity toward Trump. And, you know, some of the graffiti actually had sort of, you know, racist, they tied Trump, you know, white Trump, you know, and then some expletive. And so, I would never, you know, I hid all of my Republican campaign literature. I had it all sent to a post. I was concerned about my safety. If, you know, I would, like, God forbid I would ever wear, I wouldn't wear a MAGA hat anyway, but I just wouldn't want anyone to know that I voted for him.
Did you vote for him again this year?
No, I did not.
Can I ask why?
Well, the first time I voted for him, I voted for a president, but it turns out, you know, I thought the Republican Senate would uphold their constitutional duties and hold him, you know, for, you know, the emoluments clause, all of his business. I thought that the Republicans in the Senate would keep him in check, but they basically just caved and gave him free rein. And I, you know, not only did I not vote for Trump, I voted for Biden. I contributed to the Biden campaign, and I also wanted to flip the Senate because I was fed up with these Republican senators.
Well, thank you, Dave. So, Joe, I don't know if that's a satisfying answer to you or not, but there is an answer from a shy Trump voter who is no longer a Trump voter. So that's one of the folks that Joe Biden was trying to flip. We're getting short on time. I do want to get to a couple of things with you, Bridget and Nancy. Nancy, first off, marijuana legalization in New Jersey. I thought we would get more calls about this, but where do we stand? What exactly happened and what is going to happen next? Are you able to answer that?
Sure, of course. Marijuana is now legal for adult use, although I say the word now meaning not until the legislature passes a bill that sets out the laws in terms of how it can be sold and the specifics of that use. So anybody, you could in New Jersey be arrested today for marijuana, but soon you won't be. And so it where it stands is that it's expected to take about a year to get everything up and running. Governor Murphy, this was one of his main signature things that he campaigned on and then was unable to get all the Democrats in the state legislature to go along with him. So then the compromise was, okay, let's put it up for a vote. So it won by in the 60s percentage of yes votes. And although the votes are still being counted, but it always polled well. And now Governor Murphy has established a cannabis regulatory commission that will take whatever the legislature passes and turn those into all the rules of how the program is going to work. It is going to be taxed. And I think it's to New Jersey's credit that it beat New York and Pennsylvania. So now the expectation is that the sales tax money will be rolling in as from our two cities on each end of the state.
Indeed.
And he appointed a black woman lawyer who had worked at the ACLU, who would basically spent her career on racial justice and drug laws. And that's who he appointed to lead the commission. So that's kind of an incredible thing that he's being very clear about the fact that he has always wanted this to be about social justice.
And you are going to be talking to Governor Murphy for your regular Ask Governor Murphy show this week on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. I imagine you'll be asking about this and a bunch of other stuff.
Exactly. Thanks for the plug.
And Bridget, we are going to be hearing a lot from you, I imagine, in the coming days about the mayoral race that's coming up. In, you know, 30 seconds, what are you watching?
Ranked choice voting, Kai. That is going to be the story going forward. It's the first time New Yorkers will be casting their ballots using this system. It'll be the first time they'll be casting their ballots using the system in June. We're going to see a complete overhaul of our city government, mayor, comptroller, public advocate, and 2/3 of the city council. So it's going to be real busy between now and next June.
Big, big, big year for New York City as we face such hard challenges. Bridget Bergen is WNYC's politics reporter. Nancy Solomon is New Jersey Public Radio managing editor. She'll be talking to Governor Murphy at 7 o'clock on Tuesday right here for her monthly Ask Governor Murphy segment. The United States of Anxiety is a production of WNYC Studios. Jared Paul mixed the podcast version. Kevin Bristow and Matthew Mirando were at the boards for the live show. Our team also includes Carolyn Adams, Emily Botine, Ginny Casas, Marianne McCune, Christopher Wirth, and Verilyn Williams. Our theme music was written by Hannes Brown and performed by the Outer Borough Brass Band. Karen Frillman is our executive producer, and I am Kai Wright. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter at Kai_Wright. That's right, like the brothers. And as always, I hope that you will join us for the live version of the show next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. You can stream it at WNYC.org or tell your smart speaker to play WNYC. Until then, thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Talk to you soon.